Trauma Text, in an hour of spoken word recordings, and we'll get to it after a bit of station business. Till next week, stay safe.
All right.
Directions on how to use your radio. Find the power button. Turn it to on. Turn the knob to CKUT 90.3 FM. Relax and enjoy.
Are you a tenant in Montreal? Do you have questions about your rights? Your local housing committee can help. To find the housing committee for your neighborhood or for more resources, go to www.rclalq.qc.ca.
Show is a twice-monthly news show on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. In fact, we have two phone lines. You can call us Collect from Bordeaux Prison and Riviere de Prairie Prison by calling 514-876-3748. We also have a number for non-collect calls. That number is 438-337-8423. Feel free to call that number and leave a message for us with news to share on the show or an audio message for your loved ones inside.
Welcome to the January 21st edition of Drama Text. Tonight we have another presentation from the University of California Poetry Series. This one with the work, presenting the work of Luis Rodriguez and Jane Cortez. So, here it is. Here's tonight's edition of Drama Text.
I'm going to read a poem that some people have probably heard before. It's having to do with your past catching up to you in the most interesting places. I was in New York City doing a reading, and I came down to Washington Square Park. And you know how Washington Square Park got all these people, and people are doing tricks and, you know, comedy and all kind of things. And then I saw somebody I never thought I would see in Washington Square Park of all places. So this is the poem about meeting the animal in Washington Square Park. The acrobats were out in Washington Square Park, flaying arms and colors, the jokers and breakdancers, the singers and mimes. I pulled out of a reading at New York City College and watched a crowd gathering around a young man jumping over 10 garbage cans from a skateboard. Then out of the side of my eye, I saw someone who didn't seem to belong here, like I didn't belong. He was a big man, 6 feet and more, with tattoos on his arms, back, stomach, and neck. On his abdomen were the words in huge old English lettering, Hazard. I knew this guy. I knew that place. I looked closer. It had to be him. And it was. Animal from East LA. World heavyweight contender. The only Chicano from LA ever ranked in the top 10 of the division. The one who went toe-to-toe with Leon Spinks and even made Muhammad Ali look the other way. Animal, I yelled. Who the... are you, he asks, a quart of beer in his grasp, eyes squinting. My name's Louis from East LA. He brightened. East LA, here in Washington Square Park. Man, we everywhere. But then the proverbial what part of East LA came next, and I gave him a shock. From La Guardia, I said, that's the mortal enemy of the Big Hazard gang. I should kill you, Anima replied. Hey, if we were in LA, I suppose you would, but we in New York City, man. I should kill you anyway. Instead, he thrust out his hand with the beer and offered me a drink. We talked about what had happened since he had stopped boxing, about the time I saw him at the Cleaning House Arena looking over some up-and-coming fighters, how he had been to prison and later ended up homeless in New York City with a couple of kids somewhere. And there he was with a mortal enemy from East LA talking away. I told him how I was now a poet doing a reading at City College, and he didn't wince or look surprised. Seemed natural. Sure, a poet from East LA, that's the way it should be. Poet and boxer, drinking beer among the homeless, the tourists, and acrobats, mortal enemies. When I told him I had to leave, he said, go then, but soon shook my hand East LA style and walked off. Maybe someday you'll do a poem about me, eh? Sure, animal, that sounds great. Someday I'll do a poem about you. I got another one kind of on a strange, kind of a strange poem, I think, I don't know. You know, there was a time when I was in Chicago, people were trying to locate me, and about three people did this. They would actually go look for my name in the phone directory. In Chicago, there's four or five pages, I don't know how many pages, of Luis Rodriguez's in the phone directory. And I'll tell you what's even sad. I'm like second to the bottom of that list. So one time, this guy called, and he said that he went through the whole list, called everybody on there, finally got to me. So I always think, well, if he's going to go through that trouble, I better listen to what he has to say, which may not have been a smart thing to do, but this poem comes from that conversation I had with this guy. I never heard from him again, but I just thought the conversation deserved a poem. And it's called, it may not mean much to anybody, but I think you'll get what's happening here. I think, I still don't know what he was talking about, but... The poem is called Eva Sitting on the Curb with Pen and Paper Before the Torturers Came to Get Her. That's one of the things he said, so that gives you an impression, an idea of what's happening. The phone call came on a night of a bruising battle with my computer, reading out some scathing word art. It was from a man who claimed to be the king of poetry, and it wasn't Robert Haas, just so you know. His first words were, "Are you beauty who wants to be true?" And I thought, sure, why not? People have said worse. "I am king because I understand eternal harmony with infinite beauty," he continued. And who was I to argue? "Truth cannot be against the lie is against the truth." I was with him so far. Then he spoke about Eva. A perfect poet, he claimed. An angel born for it. And how she was incarnate ecstasy, light of the absolute. He kept on with reminiscence, fragments, and epiphanies, including one about a 7-year-old Mexican girl he spotted from a fire escape in the barrio. "They will kill her before she is 17, he declared. And I agreed. This too is true. He talked about writing a book for the universal child, how he had eclipsed his Italian background to be human, and how those youth in jail love death to be with the dead ones who can't hurt them. He appeared to surpass even this, the real, the cold, the brutal tongues licking us to sleep. Here was a Dante for our times, whose mythical Eva rouses poetry from his quilted slumber. Here was a concrete Buddha, challenging even me to drink from the chalice of my own gifts. You are on your knees, stand up, he yelled, before hanging up his words like wings to cross the battered skies of all illiteracies." Thank you. I thought I would do a poem about poetry. And this is about a certain kind of poetry that I kind of had a little apprenticeship in. I moved to Chicago in 1985, and around that time, the poetry slam scene was happening in Chicago. It seemed to be kind of good that it came together around the same time. And because there was all this performance poetry happening, all these people getting up and reading poetry, and I learned a lot in the process of just reading. I don't really do slams so much, but I just like that whole process of people just getting up and reading. And in those days in Chicago, it was happening every day. There was, I don't know, three or four or five places to go for poetry every night. Libraries, bars, a lot of bars, cafes, just everywhere. And I would go to as many as I could, and every once in a while I would get up and read, but mostly I was listening. And the interesting thing, somebody calls it the democratization of poetry, but the thing about that, unfortunately or fortunately, is that you have to go through a lot of bad poetry. And it's just natural to the thing, I guess. I don't know. It just, people get up and just read, and most of it's not that hot. But every once in a while, though, it's worth it when somebody gets up and reads a poem that really knocks you on your butt. You know what I mean? That really gets you. That's almost makes it the whole worthwhile. And maybe because we're all drinking beer and wine and everything else and whiskey, maybe all poems start sounding good after a while. But this is a poem about finding somebody that did that, and it's called Don't Read That Poem. She rises from a chair and slides toward the stage with satin feet over a worn wood floor. She bears down on the microphone like a blues singer about to reveal some secrets, a fever of poems in her hand. She seizes the mic and begins her seduction. I'm in the back of the bar, my head down. The thing she does to me with words. I want to leave. I want her never to begin. She starts with a poem about daddy love, and I feel like getting up right there and yelling, don't read that poem. The one that causes little bursts of screams inside my head, that makes tears come to my eyes that I refuse to let fall. Don't read that poem, the one about a daughter raped and killed in a shadow of a second's dark fury. I want to hide in the neon glare above me, to swim away in the glass of beer I hold close to me. She does another poem about her many mouths, and I want to howl. Don't read that poem, the one that entices me to crawl under her skin to be her heartbeat. Oh, how she plucks the right notes, rendering me as clay in bruised hands. No, don't do the one about what it is to be a 9-year-old black girl, the truth of it trembling at my feet. Somebody should make her stop. I should be home, watching TV, blank-eyed behind stale headlines, cold popcorn on the couch, a dusty turntable going round and round and round. I should be fixing a car or shooting 8-ball, but I can't leave. I need to taste the salt of her soliloquy, to be drunk with the sobriety of her verse quaking beneath my eyelids. I want to do a poem in Spanish, and even if you don't know Spanish, it's okay. I just think it's good to throw a Spanish poem every once in a while. This is a poem I wrote. It's called Pedazo por Pedazo. Pedazo por pedazo, te desgarra, pelándote capas de tu ser, mintiendo sobre quién eres, hablando por tus sueños. En el escuadrón de sus ojos tú eres un criminal, vistiéndote en una chaqueta de mentiras hecho de acero a la medida, tú eres su retrato perfecto. Quítatelo, haz tu propio manto, desafía a los interrogadores, mira bien la muerte en su mirada, di que no los rindirás, di que no los creerás cuando te nombren de nuevo, di que no aceptarás sus reglas, sus colores, sus morales depravados. Aquí tienes un camino, aquí puedes cantar en la victoria, aquí no eres una raza conquistada, la víctima perpetua, un rostro sombrío en la tormenta. Manos, mente están esculpiendo un santuario, usa estas armas contra ellos, usa tus talentos dados, no son de piedra. And I think I'll be a nice person and read you the English translation of that. Okay. It's called Piece by Piece. Piece by piece, they tear at you, peeling away layers of being, lying about who you are, speaking for your dreams. In the squalor of their eyes, you are an outlaw, dressing you in a jacket of lies, tailor-made in steel, you fit their perfect picture. Take it off. Make your own mantle, question the interrogators, eyeball the death in their gaze. Say you won't succumb, say you won't believe them when they rename you. Say you won't accept their codes, their colors, their putrid morals. Here you have a way, here you can sing victory. Here you are not a conquered race, perpetual victim, the sullen face in a thunderstorm. Hands, minds, they are carving out a sanctuary. Use these weapons against them, use your given gifts, they are not stone. I'm really honored to be here. You know, 22 years ago, I was actually walking these streets in these, you know, whatever you call them, corridors, and I was part of the summer program for minority journalists at the journalism program. It no longer exists. And I think part of the reason, I'm guessing here, is because a lot of radical minority, well, they call them minorities, but you know, journalists of color came out of it. And almost every one of them, not almost, a lot of them got fired or quit because it was really hard to be a thinking, you know, inquisitive journalist in the kind of journalism that we're in. And I was one of those people. I lasted maybe 2.5 years in the newspaper before I had to quit. And but I'm really glad, and I've been here coming over the years, but it was a very important time for me, and I'm really glad to be back here to read to you and to see all you here. I'm going to read a poem by request. This is, Robert Haas mentioned, I do have a poetry press called Tia Chucha Press, and it's based in Chicago, but we're going to open up an L.A. section of it. And we've been doing, I guess we got about 35 books now and a CD, and we're constantly trying to look for new work, even though it's very hard. Money's pretty hard to get. We don't got no money, to be honest with you, but we keep trying anyway. And then when I moved to L.A., we got some this idea to do this bookstore, coffee shop, art gallery, performance space called Tia Chucha's Café Cultural. And it's been open for a year now. And this is a very important development considering that there are co-communities in our, and as you know, but in L.A. it's kind of a strange thing because it is the media entertainment capital of the world. And we live, and I happen to move into this part of the valley that's the northeast side of the valley, they call the Mexican side. It's 400,000 people, 80% Mexican or Central American, and there was not one bookstore, not one movie house, not one cultural center. And it's worse in South Central and it's worse than East L.A. Here you are in the media entertainment capital of the world. So we created the space and it's become a very vibrant, important gathering place for ideas, for books, for art, for writing, for poetry. Just people are coming together. Yesterday they had an all-day piece, kind of a gathering place there because the kids were walking out of the high schools. And the teachers came to us and says, they're going to walk out, but we don't want them to get arrested or just hanging out and not know where to go. So we suggested have them come to Tia Chucha's. And I haven't heard the latest, but apparently they brought in some theater group. They have films to show them. They have a dialogue. They want to talk about the issues. They put up a big banner saying no blood for war. And hopefully they didn't get arrested there. But, you know, it was important to have a place where they can actually be educated, too, on what's happening. And so I think it probably went very well. Anyway, I'm going to read you the poem to my Tia Chucha. The reason why I name all these things after my Tia Chucha, she was the crazy relative in my family. And so this is to honor, I guess, all our crazy relatives, because I know we all have one. And some of us, some like Robert, are the crazy relative. No. you have to be when you're a poet. No, you know, they're always like the weird one in the family. But anyway. But I think that's good. You have to honor that spirit of kind of breaking through the mold, of letting your art really lead your life. And very few people really do that. And so this is to honor all of that. This is Tia Chucha. Every few years, Tia Chucha would visit the family in a tornado of song and open us up as if we were an overripe avocado. She was a dumpy, black-haired creature of upheaval who often came unannounced with a bag of presents, including homemade perfumes and colognes that smelled something like rotting fish on a hot day at the tuna cannery. They said she was crazy. Oh, sure, she once ran out naked to catch the postman with a letter that didn't belong to us. I mean, she had this annoying habit of boarding city buses and singing at the top of her voice. One bus driver even refused to go on until she got off. But crazy? To me, she was the wisp of the wind's freedom, a music maker who once tried to teach me guitar, but ended up singing and singing, me listening and her singing, until I put the instrument down and watched the clock click the lesson time away. I didn't learn guitar, but I learned something about her craving for the new, the unbroken, so she could break it. Periodically, she banished herself from the family and was the better for it. I secretly admired Tia Chucha. She was always quick with a story, another Pepito joke. You can ask me later what a Pepito joke is. Or a handwritten lyric that she would produce regardless of the occasion. She was a despot of desire, uncontainable as a splash of water on a varnished table. I wanted to remove the layers of unnatural seeing, the way Tia Chucha beheld the world with first eyes like an infant who can discern the elixir within milk. I wanted to be one of the prizes she stuffed into her rumpled bag. I'm going to actually read you, I have a new book that came out in hardcover last year, and it's now in paperback. I actually went to Moe's bookstore down the street and found it there. I was like, cool. I'm surprised when people have my books. I don't know why. But, when I first started getting published, I don't know if anybody else did this, but the books would always be hidden behind other books, and I would always like put them up in front and put them in other places and put them on desks, and, it's just kind of this weird thing. But the book just came out in paperback, and it's actually short fiction, my first short story collection. But I want to read you kind of a poetic passage from it, because it has to do with writing. And matter of fact, I wrote this passage many years ago as a separate poem, and I kind of decided that it worked in the story. But I thought I would read it to you as if it were a poem. It's not really, it's a prose thing, but it was my kind of looking at writing, why writing was so important for me. And the character in the book actually is doing the same thing. Is writing really is meaningful for him. So, and he's challenging himself about it because everybody in the world challenged him. Because when I became a writer in East L.A., and I love my family and I love the people of East L.A., but it really wasn't a very acceptable thing. It was a strange thing to be a writer. People actually were worried that I was off, like my tía, what's wrong with this guy? And because there you're surviving. And if you got a job and you made it in a factory and you're working in a steel mill and you're in the garment industry, you made it. I was like, you good, hang on to that. And I was working in all those places and there was no soul satisfaction. And I needed to go there, partly because my father, I saw his soul kind of completely get crushed. He was a very learned person from Mexico, got a lot of degrees, wrote books, comes to the United States and ends up working in dog factories and paint factories and selling pots and pans and Bibles in the corner. He used to sell chicharrones, down the street. And then he ends up retiring as a janitor. And I know that whatever his dream was crushed. And I kept thinking about, I didn't want that to happen to me, even if I didn't know how to not happen, how not to let it happen. So I'm going to read you this thing about writing. And got to drink a little bit here. And it goes like this. The thing is, I wanted to be a writer even before I knew what writing was about. I wanted to carve out the words that swam in the bloodstream, to press a stunted pencil onto paper so lines break free like birds in flight, to fashion words like hair, lengths and lengths of it, washed with dawn's rusting drizzle. I yearned for motored line words, speaking in their own boasting tongues, not the diminished, frightened stammering of my childhood, to shape scorching syllables with midnight dust, words that stood up in bed, danced merengues and cumbias that incinerated the belly like a shimmering habanera, words with a spoonful of tears, buckshot boners, traces of garlic, cilantro, or aerosol spray, and ocean froth, words that guffawed, tarnished smooth faces and wrung song out of silence. Words as languid as a woman's stride, as severe as a convict's gaze, herniated like a bad plan, soaked as any summer downpour. I aspire to walk inside these words, to manipulate their internal organs, surrounded by blood, gray matter, and calceras, to slam words down like the bones of a street domino game, and to crack them in two like lovers' hearts. That was my word. Actually, how much time do I have? There you go. I have about 5 minutes, so maybe what I'll do is I'll end with this one poem and then give you my thanks for being here, to being so attentive, to listening, and for having this very beautiful poetry series. Thank you all for just being there for poetry. We need more poetry, a lot more, all the time, anywhere, anytime, poetry everywhere. And so I'm going to read you this last section of this one poem in my book. This is, I would call it my recovery poem. Part of my life's journey was that I was on drugs for 7 years, and then I drank for 20 years on top of that. And it led to a lot of not having relationships. It led to a lot of sabotaging, self-sabotage. It led to even not being a good father. And even though I eventually got it together, I think to a point where I could be a good father, could have a good relationship. Sometimes it was a little bit, it was late. And I went to a recovery program almost, it's going to be 10 years in June. And I have been sober ever since then. And it's really been amazing to me. A lot more, I didn't realize how much energy there is in being sober, how much you could do creatively. And it's very hard because you're always wanting to drink again. But after almost 10 years, it's getting a little better. I named the section Notes of a Bald Cricket. It's a very long poem. It's 7 pages long. I'm not going to read the 7 pages. I'm only going to read the end. And the reason why it's called Notes of a Bald Cricket, because when I was a kid, my dad used to name all my brothers and sisters after animals or insects. My brother was called Rano for La Rana, the frog. My one sister was La Pata, the duck. And my other sister was La Cucaracha for the cockroach. And I was El Grillo, which is the cricket. And apparently the reason he wouldn't find qualities in the little kids when they're born, and that's why he named them. And my quality was, as soon as I started to walk, for some reason I had a little jump in my walk. I don't know why. So I was the cricket. And then in the summer times, we would, because we were living in South Central LA and Watts, and it was really hot, and if you're not careful, you'll get lice. My mom would always cut her hair, like, you know, bald, so that we wouldn't get that much lice. So then they started calling me El Grillo Pelón, the bald cricket. So... over the years, that was my nickname. So I named this the Notes of a Bald Cricket. And I'm just going to read you the last section, which is kind of like an identity poem, a poem of I am, what am I, what am I doing here? And it goes through a number of images and details and a number of various things that hopefully one or two or three of them will come to you. As you know, poetry, it's meant to have to be read over and over again. You may not always get it the first time you hear it, but you're always getting some image, some detail that kind of hangs with you, and that's the one you need to hang on to as you're listening. So this poem will come in with a lot of different things, and maybe one or two or three, four or five images will stay. And it goes like this. Waiting through the lush of memory, through speechless sounds, seeing myself in the backhand of past lives, crumbling emotions surround me as this obsessive and irresponsible poetry man beckons to write, to tell truths. Oh, such a liar. I'm just a sleeveless jacket in a closet of worn clothes. I'm the incision of scarring verbs across the faces of all my loves. This Mexican who is a stranger in Mexico, this pocho who hates milk with his coffee, juice with his vodka, who speaks English with an East LA accent and Spanish with an East LA accent. This Tarahumara's lost son, this gravel tongue, this ghost beneath every ruin, rising like jaguar's breath in a tropical storm. All sacrifices reside in me, all jagged chests, all virgin hosts, all warrior princes, all my lynches and Guatemocs residing in my lungs, filled with the records of two massive oceans, all bloods commingling. This Moor whose poetry stains the library walls, this armor-plated, mail-wearing, sword-thrusting Andalusian who flew landward through Iberian coast and those of Sem Anahuac. I am Cortez's thigh. I am the African beard. I am the long coarse hair of Chichimeca skulls. I am Chicano poet, a musician who can't play music as a musician is a poet who works in another language. There is a mixicology of brews within me. I've tasted them all, still fermenting as grass-high anxieties. I am rebel's pen, rebel's son, father of revolution and verse. I am capitalism's angry Christ, Tecnoquetzalcoatl, toppling the temples of modern thievery, of surplus value and word art, exploited, anointed, and perhaps double-jointed. There's a brown goddess in my eye, a Guadalupana for the broken red earth. The sacred is too sacred for walled cathedrals, for incest and Baroque martyrs and vested garbs, for pulpit schemers and sweat lodge fakers and garbled spiritualists on the best-selling list. I am disciple and elder. I am rockero and hip-hop bandit, rapping Aslanese in between brick-like texts. What do I know? What blazing knowledge can I spear? Who can burn with me and not get burned? Violence used to be great solace. Alcohol, my faithful collaborator, scratching dank words from stale corners. Now there are whole cities in my gardens. A stack of drums pulsing from my temples. Saxophone riffs streaming from the sky like a waterfall into the canyons of my body. Walls carry my name, walls in their luminant fractures. Walk with me then. Walk to the Maya. Walk with me along headstones of past loves, past plans, long gone junctures. Walk with me through the forest of collective remembering, shamed and honored by the trees. I'm no immigrant. I belong because I belong. I'm no shaggy stranger. I'm the holy villain, the all-lawed saint, the most godless and therefore dearest to the mystery. Where suicide is not solution, where poems no longer puncture the fathoms, and where walking with me is to become brethren to rain and night sweats and the betrayed. Thank you very much. Muchas gracias. Gracias, Camacho. Thank you.
You're listening to CKUT 90.3 on the FM dial. This is Droma Text. We're here once a week with the spoken word. We're going to continue tonight's show with a presentation, a half-hour presentation of the work of poet Jane Cortez. It comes from the University of California television series, which has a number of extraordinary poets, their lunchtime poetry series. Well, here she is, Jane Cortez.
The following program contains adult language and themes and is intended for mature audiences. Viewer discretion is advised.
I am New York City. Here is my brain of hot sauce, my tobacco teeth, my mattress of bed bug tongue. Legs apart, hand on chin, war on the roof, insults, pointed fingers, push carts, my contraceptives all. Look at my pelvis flushing. I am New York City of blood, police, and fried pies. I rub my docks red with grenadine and jelly madness. Oh, okay, my two selfies, my sinuses, my fat ovaries, excuse me. This is my grime, my thigh of steel, spoons, and toothpicks. I imitate no one. I am New York City of the brown spit and soft tomatoes. Give me my confetti of flesh, my marquee of false nipples, my sideshow of open beaks, in my nose of soot, in my ox-bled eyes, in my ear of Saturday night specials. I eat ha-ha, hee-hee, and ho-ho. I am New York City. Never change, never sleep, never melt. My shoes are incognito. Cadavers grow from my goatee. Look, I sparkle with shit, with wishbones. My nickname is Glue Me. Take my face of stink bombs, my star-spangled banner of hot dogs. Take my beer can junta, my reptilian ass of footprints, and approach me through life, approach me through death, approach me through my widow's peak, through my split ends, my asthmatic laugh. Approach me through my wash rag, half ankle, half elbow. Massage me with your camphor tears. Salute the patina and concrete of my rat-tail wig. Face up, face down, piss into the bite of our handshake. I am New York City, my skillet head friend, my fat bellied comrade. Citizens, break wind with me.
Words are very musical. There's nothing more to say about that. That's it. Words are musical. I mean, there is the word, the sound of the voice. And, you know, what, and your attitude, the attitude you're putting on top of it.
Everywhere drums. Drums. Everywhere drums. Drums that remain to boost your thighs in its radar, in its thump of a bass without being beggar. Sunlight, midnight, having to be barfly, having to be bullfrog, having to be bagworm, having to be birdcall, having to be banjo, having to be bongo, having to be pit-pat, having to be rub-dub, having to be rat-tat, having to be drum-roll, having to be drums. Drums, burnt drums to clear the skin among dreams, flint of antibiotic dawn, potash and cinnamon sperms rising with an algebra of swamp drums, no longer Pyrex teeth, topaz excrement, angular nightmares, no longer axe-shaped lips, pierced Corten buttocks at the bottom of fermented mud drums. Drums, flowing with a mask of tornadoes, pickup band holding spirals of whiplash in his brick-brack, in its eye fold of mashed tendons, rimless springs, entrances funneled with catafalques of embroidered signal drums, drums made from rivers, made from a multiplication of dance steps, made from catfish skulls in a tongue's embrace, made from a rosette of orange rosin cradle cap, with impulse spotted like seclusion, and revolution decorating its drum with memory grease made from Nat Turner's body. Drums preoccupied in cheeks of ancestors. Drums twirling into footprints, into snare drums, into shoeshine rags. The dust on those hides, on those reeds, blowing into street octaves of liberation drums. Of membranes close to the sun's memoirs and life duck of this Brillo atmosphere. Drums the size of flea bites. Drums that are fly heads. Cork and plantain drums. Base oil drums and flannel flame reeves of iridescent toenail drums. Everywhere drums. Everywhere drums. Drums brushing whiskers of imagination into ink ripples of compelling pompadours. Drums grinding into steel, silver wires out of nostril bells embalmed with images inoculating drums into feet spikes of new canoes and new patterns of new hurricanes. Drumming with red palms of passion. Drumming with villages in Mozambique. Drumming with uncombed look of a message moving through heartbeats of six female drums. Everywhere drums. Drums of acrobatic wombs, of bladders and trumpets engulfed in a drum of opening elbows. The alto wind of sapling drums, fluorescent drums of benzene marshes, barracuda drums and asphalt drums, of nipple star drums, of hunger drums, of drums indexed between ovums, between floral ligaments and the rhythm of rickets drumming into a hollow of blues, baritone callus on rainbow covenant of pickled heart drums, hooked up through pores of pimento, through ovations of bloated gills, babbling gorda drums holding feasers of thumps in a coil of favelas, drums, the frequencies in position, drums, the sulfurated humidity of brooding rolls, broken pistons and cockpits of drums, remaining with pablum, with fluorine, with city whistles and forks entering drums of borax and wild hairs, turbo-jetted throat drums, chrome-studded fangs of stomping stampedes into tom-tom diaphragms of black diamond pearl drums, everywhere drums, everywhere drums, peninsula of my berserkness drum, axle of my hydraulic cough drum, diatonic drums, crazy bone of my hyenic laughter drum, thrill of a triad of electro drums, drums in ruvescent blades of Roxbury wind drums, tall, cool, fine drums, cry drums, scream drums, dream interpretation of jungle spells and tenement fire drums, searching through the buckeye drums, reaching for washboards of African blood drums, laughing drums, emerging drums, drums whispering, drums climbing, drums migrating into petals and moves of finger-snapping tambourine drums, brick drums, crawfish drums, drums of new belches, drums with old iodine, undulating armpit drums, talking drums, Cubano drums, Iroko drums, spare leg strokes on tongue-tied drums, opal pool cues, groundnut pyramids, hey, peewee from Panama drums, Sanukade. Sanukade and my wide-mouthed paradiddles of Odupwe drums and shaganaga, shaganaga, shaganaga drums and those bragging drums of sparkling cans and these homebrew tear-jerking drums and this bong-bong deep in the cowbell of Zimbabwe drums and staccato beating drums crossing the Limpopo, crossing death drums, fork skin drumming against drums, drums, fierce drums, growling drums, roaring drums, echo drums over mojo, whoop whooping drums, out of cuckoo, kahooka, duka drums, ear drums, kicking drums, Wolof drums, drums made of dynamite, drums made from elephant yelps, Fulani drums, Fon drums, Ga drums, drums of new Juniflips, drums of ancient Mardi Gras, Fanti drums, Ashanti drums, Sanufu drums, and my indigo lips smacking Kunga drums, tightening drum rhythms into mush mouth rhythms, childbirth rhythms, Igbo godhouse rhythms, melancholy bellies crossed in a knife of rhythms, of rhythms from Baba's calabashes, of rattling rather rhythm drums, of drums to drums of brass cymbals of drums, dazzling with hummingbirds, with guava seeds, with cowrie shells, with cobalt and uranium and mandingos on the road to Kokomo drums, everywhere drums. Drums, spit drums from Oduduwa drums, everywhere drums, domo 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 drums, Oduduwa drums, everywhere drums, everywhere drums, 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 everywhere drums. Cultural Operations 1992. The fishmongers are trying to sell fish, ironmongers trying to sell iron. Poets are having beautiful springtime daughters. A sculptor is walking around astonished that he's 55. A painter overdoses on fumes from a pizza parlor. 8-year-old boys are on stage holding their crotches and rapping about I'm making love to my baby. While armed Renamo bandits who murder playmates, rape little girls, turn kids into killers, and force families to cook and eat remains of dead relatives are calling themselves heroic freedom fighters. And the white South African government wants to give up the word apartheid without giving up the gold, the army, and the real estate. And the new judge is showing his hairy teeth to the Supreme Court as the European Economic Community gang up to keep racism in his body of segregated cash machines. And it's Operation Same Old Bullshit. Operation Same Old Right-Wing Multinational Think Tank Manipulation of History, Geography, and Information. Operation Out-of-Shape Generals, still talking war and licking plates in the cafeteria. Operation Desert Dumbness. Operation Army for Hire. Operation Pop Star, still looking like a walking flophouse. Operation Thieves, still giving music awards and patting each other on the back for stealing and imitating their asses off. Operation What Does It Matter? As long as the mob gets theirs and the queen gets hers and the ex-slaves continue to pay tribute and the colonies continue to pay rent and the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank stay intact and there are no mass unruly defaultations and no reorganizational plans of advancement on front burner of an urban rebellion, and as long as we act as silly and mediocre and corrupt and greedy and repressed as we are programmed to act and don't explode and globalize that explosion into a redistribution of all there is to redistribute, then everything remains what it is. And children, you'd better hold on to your balls, because it's Operation Deforestation, Operation Deprivation, Operation Privatization, Operation Falsification, Operation Contamination, Operation Marginalization, Operation Militarization, Operation Politarization, Operation Subordination, Operation Toxification, Operation Destabilization, Operation Termination, Operation. Well, don't write another word about wanting to write another word. It's useless. The windows are filthy, the instruments contaminated, the smell of someone entering you in shoes covered with turkey shit is here. And what can you say? This is not a great performance. Today is tomorrow. I poot on your facts, I piss on your Xerox. These New York City pigeons, cooing in the air shaft are responsible for me stumping my toe, spraining my ankle, and getting sick on ammonia fumes. That pigeon roosting on the clothesline stole my nightgown. Those pigeons on the street lamp made me feel foolish while riding in a black car completely splattered with their gray and white poo-poo. These New York City pigeons are not calm like pigeons of Oshala in Brazil and do not croon like doves of Zimbabwe. New York City pigeons moan strange, low, mournful, quivering, cancer-like moans mixed with hungry hyena barks and gulping lost of the forest cries. New York City pigeons are not relaxed like pigeons sunning at Marcel Duchamp's swimming pool in San Francisco. New York City pigeons flap viral feather fungus dust from wings into faces, then sit on steps vocalizing and waiting for the death of mankind. New York City pigeons. New York City pigeons are not content like pigeons posing for photos on arms of men in Plaza of Caracas. New York City pigeons will lounge on ledges and murmur profanity all day. Will fight for fucking space in the mating season, shit on air conditioners, and wipe their asses on windows while big cockroaches suck sucrets in the dark. New York York City pigeons. New York City pigeons are not sitting quietly on bicycle seats looking at tourists like the pigeons in the Peace Memorial Park of Hiroshima. New York City pigeons roll their pearly eyes, inflate their throats, and defecate on the shoulders of pedestrians. New York City pigeons have no love for crumb-throwing pigeon lovers. And no year of the pigeon is celebrated. At least not for these New York City pigeons.
I know that some of my work is confrontational. It's not meant to be confrontational, but since I'm a very open person, it is what it is, and I'm going to take in whatever comes to me. And that's just how I see a reading. I don't really try to fix it. In that I'm not thinking for the audience, they're thinking for themselves. I'm creating, they're recreating whatever I have created, they are recreating at the moment, and I'm totally open to whatever happens.
Dreams. I close my eyes, miss the right train, board the wrong bus, get lost, get drunk, rub down in cactus juice, dress up in wild turkey feathers, walk with voodoo priest into horrible charcoal mist of a government assassination building. I clear my throat, scratch my belly, drop into dream of deflated whales, into sockets of inflamed cobras. My thighs are fly squatters of dead flies, my forehead a tuning pipe of unmelodious pinging, my uterus an enlarged ball of electric piranhas. I move, and the hole in my rug gives birth to a transparent river of crocodiles. I stand on head of a hippo to check out the tornado of musical instruments. A sadness enters my chest. I scream, I swallow, I moan, I hold smoke in my navel, spit ink into my imaginary microphone fist. I whisper, I cough, I see my desk and papers gone, my passport torn and crushed, my tennis shoes frozen in ice. A half-mad woman with baby says she's Ogutomele, and boom, an abrupt change of pitches. Dark cave of talking rocks, enormous bed of snoring camels, house of wounded skunk, 3 clocks speaking an old outspoken eagle-like squawks in stomach of an unsatisfied bank teller on fire. And the midget says, imagination smiles like a fat prostitute. And the waitress swears that she has the meaning of life and death wrapped in 4 plastic baggies. And I grin and drink white lightning mixed with fried cabbage, bury myself like a frog in soil, hear intoxicated ancestors talking backward. And there are yellow cows with broken hooves dangling against the sky, men with alligator meat packed on their knees, women with dream policies between teeth, horses with ripped ligaments in pockets. I sit, I watch, I search my speech impediment for discharging passengers. I invent the swelter in one nostril. I leap for air like dolphins. I turn loose, ritual of turning loose on sandbags, my flesh waiting to be invaded by cold-blooded lizards, my fish-stained napkin ready for confiscation, my empty shoes available for adoption, the ghost in my hair stinking. Adupwe. Adupwe means thank you in the Yoruba language in Nigeria. And this was written for a great poet by the name of Nicolas Guillen, who was the national poet of Cuba, and he died in 1989. Nicolas Guillen, the poetry of Nicolas Guillen. Poetry dedicated to his two selves, his two sides. Poetry in half notes, in eighth notes, in 6/8 time. Poetry moving backward and forward like war dances. Poetry doing the rah-rah in an African vocabulary. Poetry of Nicolas Guillen, Nicolas banjo guitar Imbira Guillen, improvising like the great instrument he is, in Yoruba, in Spanish, in song, not exotic, but zotico. Not Miami, but Havana. Not Tweet Tweet, but Mau Mau. Adupwe to the man from Camagüey. Adupwe. a dupe. This morning I went into the Paris of his poetry and came out with poets clinking glasses to Nouveau Beaujolais at Roquet's. I pushed into favela of his poetry and emerged with carnival costumes from 100-year celebration of the abolition of slavery. I looked through his blunt poetry and saw exiles smiling like rusty bulldozers and acting like disjointed chiefs of staff, like broken stags roaming in Everglades of khaki teeth and clandestine scrotum. I walked through Seance House of his poetry and came upon a fiesta sizzling in the bubble chamber of Aztec clouds. I dived into political content of his poetry and discovered mysterious caves with odors of rotting imperialist dust. I looked at shell-lined pelvis of his poetry and saw infra-green heat of human capacity snaking down through underground galaxy of atomic clocks. I moved into stamina of his poetry and returned with boxing gloves smelling like Santeria shrines. I ran along the Malecón of his poetry and found a poverty imbued with the power to drive straight through a northern frente frio. I stood in stadium of his staccato yelping poetry and heard messages coded and covered with drumheads from Oyo. And I said, a dupe, Nicholas Guillen. A dupe for the cavalcade of leaves and moaning doves and regalia of punching bags. A dupe for the musky cyclones in bolero jackets and smoke-filled consultation of your groomer trees. A dupe for the call and response of collaborating oceans and the rooster juice splashed on feet steeped in Roomba motivations. A dupe for the great poetic confrontations of Nicholas Guillen. A dupe, determination belongs to Guillen. Revolutionary thought belongs to Guillen. Solidarity belongs to Guillen. Gullah Efek Ewe Fula Fulani Twi belongs to Guillen. Minde Mandingo Muisian Bandu Suk belongs to Guillen. Bumba La Kunga Bumba belongs to Guillen. Negrismo, socialismo belongs to Guillen. Completeness of life in poetry belongs to Guillen. Nicholas banjo guitar in Bira Guillen. Digging up roots and making his mark, breaking those chains and making his mark, mixing up rhythms and making his mark, talking to his people and making his mark, working with his work and making his mark. Nicholas banjo guitar in Bira Guillen, making his mark. Rape. What was Inez Garcia supposed to do for the man who declared war on her body? The man who carved a combat zone between her breasts? Was she supposed to lick crabs from his hairy ass? Kiss every pimple on his butt? Blow hot breath on his big toe? Draw back the corners of her vagina and hee-haw like a California burro? This being wartime for Inez, she stood facing the knife, the insults, and her own smell drying on the penis of the man who raped her. She stood with a rifle in her hand, doing what a defense department will do in times of war. And when the man started grunting and panting and wobbling forward like a giant hog, she pumped lead into his 300 pounds of shaking flesh, sent it flying to the Virgin of Guadalupe, then celebrated Day of the Dead Rapist Punk. And just what the fuck else was she supposed to do? And what was Joanne Little supposed to do for the man who declared war on her life? Was she supposed to tongue his encrusted toilet stool lips, suck the numbers off of his tin badge, choke on his claptrap balls, squeeze on his nub of rotten maggots and sing, God bless America, thank you for fucking my life away? This being wartime for Joanne, she did what a Defense Department will do in times of war. And when the piss-drinking, shit-sniffing guard said, I'm gonna make you wish you were dead, black bitch, come here, Joanne came down with an ice pick in the SWAT freak motherfucker's chest. Yes, in the fat neck of that racist policeman, Joanne did the dance of the ice picks. And once again, from coast to coast, house to house, we celebrated Day of the Dead Rapist Punk. And just what the fuck
else were we supposed to do?
There are a lot of edges. Edges could be some very mysterious, isolated spots in the world. I mean, you have the edges of rivers, you have the edges of oceans, you have, these are the places where you walk, these are places where you go to be alone. You are alone. But there's something about when you put cutting edge, and that becomes an art term, and I think it sort of implies that you are being very aggressive about being yourself, and that might put you in confrontation with something that is not quite on the edge, or it is a device used for conversation. But edges can be very mysterious places in the world.
Everybody wants to be somebody. Everybody wants to be somebody on a magazine cover. On a magazine cover. Everybody wants to be somebody on television. Television, television. Everybody wants to be somebody in the mouth of someone, someday, some way in the USA. In the USA. Everybody wants to be somebody, but nobody wants to struggle to be somebody. Nobody wants to suffer to be somebody. Everybody wants to be somebody if somebody is someone, but nobody wants to be no one if no one is nobody. Not in the USA, not in the world today, because everybody wants to be famous. Famous. Everybody wants to be somebody famous, but nobody. Nobody. Needs it. Nobody needs it. Everybody wants it. Everybody wants it. And everybody should be recognized as something. Everybody has the right to be something, something. But nobody wants to just be something, something, something. Everybody wants to be something, something, something famous. Famous. But nobody needs it. Nobody needs it. You know, I'm cheerful and optimistic. Even though I have this radioactive cloud above my head, I'm cheerful and optimistic. Even though my reproductive rights are threatened, I'm cheerful and optimistic. Even though I have toxic sludge on my Christmas shoes, I'm cheerful and optimistic. Even though my confirmation dress is such a mess in this acid rain, I'm cheerful and optimistic. So cheerful, so optimistic. I'm cheerful and optimistic. Even though I eat purple dioxin king crab legs from Exxon, Alaska, I'm cheerful and optimistic. Even though the self-appointed saints of our time, St. Jonas of Savimbi, St. Joseph Michel Francois of Haiti, and St. Gacha of Beausoleil are sprinkling us with their filthy holy water of human destruction, I'm cheerful and optimistic. Even though I'm having polluted fish for dinner tonight, I'm cheerful and optimistic. Even though the clones are devoted to cloning themselves, I'm cheerful and optimistic. I'm cheerful and optimistic like my computer. So cheerful, so optimistic, so cheerful, so optimistic. Thank you.
So that concludes this week's edition of Dromo Text. We'll be back next week with another hour-long presentation of the spoken word. You can check out the UC Television series, poetry series, at www.uctv.tv and then search.